I'm weary. Emotionally, spiritually, even physically. It's been a tough season at Redeemer. As Bill mentioned last week, we've had multiple parishioners die in recent weeks, as well as the immediate family of other parishioners. We lost our former priest, Sean Porter, a couple of weeks ago. I worked with Sean for years on staff at State when we were on Southside. And I am, like others, feeling battered by wave after wave after wave that keeps knocking us down. I prayed a lot. Sometimes I'm just weeping and hoping the Spirit is making sense of how I feel and how much I need the Lord's presence. And I know I'm not alone. All of us are going through things. We've all suffered losses of multiple kinds over the last 18 months during the pandemic, and that's on top of all the trials of regular life. It is okay to grieve, to lament, to cry out to God that this isn't the way it's supposed to be. As Christians, we don't grieve as if we have no hope, but that implies that we do grieve. In our own way and in our own time, there's no one right way to grieve, but it's important to let yourself feel grief and walk through it. On Wednesday night, during the time of evening prayer, we'll be focusing on the practice of lament. If you're feeling grief or feeling lost in a world that seems unfamiliar, or if you've suffered trauma or other losses, I invite you to join us here in the sanctuary or on Zoom. Feel free to invite others. The Lord is near, and he's listening even when it feels like we're alone. He wants us to allow ourselves time to feel and to weep and to mourn and to pray together. And it's times like this when we have a choice. We can lean in towards God, or we can turn away and embrace the world's solutions for our grief and exhaustion. I know the choice isn't really that clear-cut, and all of us go back and forth between leaning on God and turning towards whatever makes us feel better, or perhaps not feel at all. It might be food or alcohol, the internet, binge-washing. My personal favorite is chocolate. If I'm having a bad day, chocolate increases serotonin levels, so it lowers stress and it makes me feel better, at least for a while. It's not a good long-term solution, though. Drawing near to the Lord day by day and sometimes moment by moment is the answer. That said, I don't think the Lord is against the occasional piece of dark chocolate. At least I hope not. Our passage today from James is about wisdom from above versus worldliness. James makes it clear that we can't have both godly wisdom and what the world offers as wisdom. One of my favorite Psalms is 121, and it reminds us, where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. When we're weary or heartbroken, grieving or overwhelmed, frustrated or angry, hurt, afraid, our eyes should look to the Lord. He is our help. Part of what I find overwhelming and discouraging in the world today is the vitriol of dissenting views towards one another, which tear communities apart, even faith communities. Apparently, there is nothing new under the sun, because James is warning about quarrels and fighting among church members 2 millennia ago. And he's not subtle in his condemnation. He calls them adulterous, which is a common way in the Old Testament to speak about Israel when they turned away from the Lord. They followed idols or turned to another nation to save them when they had the Lord of the universe as their king. James is telling the Jewish Christians recently scattered to various places near and far that whatever, looking to whatever the world offers them, takes them down a dangerous path. Friendship with the world is enmity with God. James is perhaps the oldest part of the New Testament. It's thought to have been written prior to 50 AD. It's written by James, the half-brother of Jesus, to Jews who had come to Jesus as Messiah and had been dispersed by either choice or persecution into the world outside Judea. So the letter is written to Jewish Christians. That's important to remember. What James is talking about is not outside the church, but inside it. It would be easy to say that those outside the church are worldly and those inside it are godly. But James is warning those inside the church about being worldly and enemies of God. The epistle is almost all practical advice from a wise pastor to people trying to maintain their faith in a world hostile to it. There's a lot to learn from this letter for us today because we also live in a world increasingly hostile to faith. There's nothing new under the sun. James lays out a contrast between godly and worldly wisdom, as well as exploring the relationship between humility and faith. As a hospice chaplain, I've had a number of conversations with patients and their families, and they say something along the lines of, everything was fine until a month ago, 3 months ago, whatever it was, when they found the cancer, whatever it was. Of course, the truth is that the cancer didn't just appear last month. It's been growing for years, perhaps, at least months. The person appeared healthy, but really they were dying. There was something inside of them that was eating away at them until it was too late to treat. And I think that's what James is warning us about here. There are people who go to church, they say they're believers, they claim to be spiritually healthy, but who have a spirit of jealousy and selfish ambition eating away at them. James has a harsh word for people like that. He says they're boasting and they're ultimately liars. They may have the appearance of wisdom, but what they have really is a cynical and critical spirit. The enemy can sometimes make worldly wisdom seem like the right path, but it ultimately leads to destruction. I'm sure most of us would say we lean towards God. We don't choose the world's wisdom over God's wisdom. We aren't enemies of the Lord. But is that true? Do we choose wisdom from above all of the time? Really? Like the father in the gospel reading last week, I believe, help my unbelief. We believe. We really do. Lord, help our unbelief. Help us when we turn towards the wrong things. The world is full of conflicting forces. We get frustrated and we compare ourselves to others. We rightly criticize evil, but that's all we do. We criticize and complain. We quarrel with those with whom we disagree, but we don't do anything to make peace. We choose not to see that we are part of the problem. We aren't willing to be open to reason, to be truly impartial as James directs. I'm not even sure where I can go to find impartiality anymore. In 4:1, James tells us what causes quarrels and fights among us is our passions at war within us. The war between good and evil rages not just outside of us, but within each of us. We have the capability to choose godly wisdom or worldly wisdom every time there's a question. Sometimes it's hard to choose. Sometimes the choices aren't clear-cut. The enemy works very hard to make worldly wisdom seem godly. In a world full of jealousy and strife, criticism and dissension, how do we get this wisdom from above? How do we overcome the war raging within each of us to choose good? James has said earlier in the letter that God will give wisdom to anyone who asks in faith. Are we going to the Lord in faith that he's listening and he's working all things for good in the kingdom? That is way harder than it sounds. I've spent a lot of time in the last weeks and months asking over and over again, why? Why, Lord? My faith is getting battered. Where are you? I think half the battle is continuing to go to the Lord, even when it feels like no one's listening. Because he is listening. He is with us in our pain and confusion. He's right there with us when we feel him and when we don't. Hold on to that. So God gives wisdom to those who ask in faith. What does a wise person look like according to James? It's not a particular skill set or a knowledge base. Wisdom is something deeper. James writes in 3:13, someone is wise when there's evidence of works coming from good conduct that are done in the meekness of wisdom. What that means is that out of this gentle wisdom, there should be good fruit that other people can see. James further describes this wisdom from above in verse 17 as pure, peaceful, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruit. It's impartial and it's sincere. Now, for those who James has described as full of jealousy and selfish ambition, they might sneer at those characteristics as someone who's weak or naive. You know, they might say if they really understood how the world is, they wouldn't be gentle or merciful. Don't they realize how bad the world is? The reality is that these characteristics are hard to live out because they require fortitude and a wisdom of how the world works and who God is. There's personal cost to living with godly wisdom. Both the world and the enemy will try to tempt you away from living this way. So which of those characteristics of a wise person is hardest for you? He said, being pure, peaceful, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy, impartial, sincere. Perhaps you struggle with being pure. That means living a holy life, a life set apart for God. Do you struggle with sensual sins or addiction? Is your life really set apart? Perhaps being peaceful and gentle is hard for you. I think that's true for all of us, but especially for men, the world says gentleness and peacefulness are not characteristics that are extolled to be manly. What about being open to reason when you think you're right? Are you merciful in all situations? Are you impartial? In the divided and partisan culture in which we live, how many of us can say with certainty that we are unbiased? Are you sincere in all you say and do? And can others see the good fruit from the wisdom that you have? To live this way will take effort. It will take sacrifice, determination, and constantly going to prayer to hear and discern what is godly and wise from the Lord. And when you fail, and you will, get up again and don't get discouraged. This is hard stuff because we live in a world full of quarrels and fights, and none of us is immune to it. Remember, this is a letter written to Christians. like us. Christians who are quarreling and fighting. Christians whose passions are warring within them. Christians who desire what they don't have. Christians who James accuses of murder and adultery. I don't think he means that literally, but still, those are serious charges. When circumstances are difficult and conflicted, don't lose sight of the very real truth that also the world is full of beauty and good and joy. Don't just assent to the idea of peace. Make peace. It's an active thing. James says in 3:18, a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. Every farmer will tell you that farming is hard. Sowing takes effort. Without hard work, the seeds will not grow, and peace will be elusive. N.T. Wright says, by the world, James seems to mean that the way the world behaves, the pattern of life, the underlying implicit story, the things people want, expect, long for, and dream of that drive them to think and behave the way they do. You know, if you don't go against the current, but you drift along, you will by default become a friend of the world, because that's what's normal. To live with wisdom from above is going to make you different, and that's hard for most of us. We want to fit in. We don't want to stand out, or if we stand out, we want it to be because we're the best at something. We're fine to stand out if we're first, but that isn't the way of wisdom from above. Jesus tells his followers in our gospel today, if anyone would be first, he must be last of all and servant of all. That's a hard teaching. There is hope, though. God gives grace to the humble when we're looking, when we're willing to be last, when we're willing to serve others, no matter what that looks like, when we're willing to live a life that is set apart, striving for peace and gentleness, when we're willing to be reasonable, impartial, sincere, and merciful with those with whom we disagree. The key is humility, which means understanding that we are God's creation, serving Him and not ourselves. We aren't the ones in charge. Knowing the successes of your life isn't because of how awesome you are or how awesome I am, but because of how awesome our God is. When we do those things, there will be good fruit, because we're living in godly wisdom and under God's amazing grace. I wish I could give you 3 easy steps to a godly life, but that doesn't exist. We live in a messy world. We live in a world that is sometimes tragic or filled with sorrow and pain. Things don't go the way we want them to. We also live in God's glorious creation, full of beauty and joy. We live in a world where we have real choice between good and evil, between God's wisdom and the folly of what the world offers. Sometimes those choices are murkier and harder to discern which is godly and which is not. So it will require prayer and an assurance that the Lord is near. His wisdom is available to us all. God's grace is sufficient, even on the hardest days, even when we're weary and discouraged. God yearns to give us grace. We only have to humble ourselves and ask. I'm going to close in prayer. This is a prayer from the prayer book. I don't remember which number, but it's one for guidance. O God, by whom the meek are guided in judgment, and light rises up in darkness for the godly, grant us in all of our doubts and uncertainties the grace to ask what you would have us do, that the spirit of wisdom may save us from all false choices, that in your light we may see light, and in your straight path we may not stumble. Through Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen.